How deep in debt are you? $10,000? $15,000? Maybe even more? And every day that goes by, you know what happens. Your debt gets larger and larger and larger. Well, if you've had it with your mushrooming debt problem and the stress it is causing you, make this free call today to the Debt Solutions Network. One quick, no-obligation call is all it takes for one of our partner companies to show you how they can help you get out of debt. So if you have $10,000 or more in combined debt and you want to learn how you can solve it, make this free, no-obligation call now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035.
If you are in serious debt, you have to get out of it and fast. Call my friends at the Debt Solutions Network now.
800-814-5035. 800-814-5035. Call us 24/7. 800-814-5035.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from George Mason University. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, with Zach Applebaum, Brian Chandler, Pretoria Law, David Farrell, Farrell Advisory, and Gwen Rosner, Flex Professionals. And we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Linda Rosenberg, CEO of National Council for Behavioral Health, Christine Jung, President of Blue Compass, Morale Nakashian, President and Co-Founder of MN Blum, and Steve Lorberbaum, owner of Assisted Hands Home Care. Let's get to know our first guest, Linda Rosenberg, CEO of National Council for Behavioral Health. First, Linda, what is the National Council for Behavioral Health? What are you guys doing?
What we do is we're a policy shop on the Hill, representing people with mental illnesses and addictions. Our 3,000-member organizations serve about 10 million adults and children a year.
Wow. Where are you from originally?
From New York City, the Bronx.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters?
One brother.
One brother, older or younger?
Younger.
Uh-huh. And what did Mom and Dad do for a living?
My dad sold furniture and my mom was a homemaker.
Mm-hmm. So you're involved in an organization that earlier we were speaking, you told us when you got involved 13 years ago, it was 12 staff and now it's 130 staff and probably the preeminent organization in its industry?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you really built this organization. It really is a passion of yours, isn't it?
It's a passion, and it was an opportunity. I didn't build it alone. The one thing I think I'm good at is picking talent and wanting to have smarter people around me. Mm-hmm. And so I put together a strong team, mm-hmm. including a strong policy mm-hmm. team.
Alrighty.
And we really grew.
So Mom and Dad, you mentioned earlier that Mom had some stuff going on when you were a young girl. What was going on back then?
So my mom was depressed. We didn't use that word. I come from a working class background, and she just spent a lot of time in bed, had migraines, and my brother and I were left to our own devices.
So your mom was in bed with migraines. You and your brother were left to your own devices. And you mentioned that you felt fortunate because you were bright and you got asked to come to certain schools. What was going on? You got exposed. What was going on there?
So I was good in school, and I was able to skip a grade and mm-hmm. then go to a special high mm-hmm. school in New York City mm-hmm. where there were lots of young women. It was a women's school who were not only smart but came from very well-to-do families.
All right. So you were fortunate where you were invited into this school even though you guys didn't have any money. And it's interesting. Did it ever occur to you that perhaps the role that you were playing in the family, what role did you play in the family? If Mom was depressed and you had a younger brother?
Yes.
Uh-huh, what role did you play in the family?
I think I was a problem solver, certainly for myself and to some extent for my brother.
Uh-huh. So you sort of took a responsible role in the family because your mom was having some issues.
Right.
Was that consciously the reason that you went into this industry?
No. Uh-huh. It wasn't.
Uh-huh. But just a connection there, do you think?
Definitely.
Uh-huh. So earlier we were speaking. So who supported you when you were a little girl? I mean, if Mom wasn't necessarily there and you were taking responsibility for your brother, and who supported you?
Our grandparents, actually on both sides of our family, but particularly my father's mother.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
So I spent a lot of weekends there, as did my brother. I continued that relationship all through college.
How do you think that affected you?
Well, it certainly affected me and my appreciation of grandparents, and I'm lucky enough to have five grandchildren that I'm very devoted to.
What do you mean?
So I care a lot about them. They're very fortunate. My kids are both very successful. So my grandchildren have lots of opportunities. But I always consciously remember what it was like to have very loving grandparents. And actually, my grandmother lived until my children were teenagers. And so we have a history in the family of grandparents having an active role in the lives of their grandchildren.
What's that have to do with what you're doing nowadays, running this organization that's helping 10 million people a year?
I think I'm very empathetic to the families who have children or, you know, siblings with mental illnesses or addictions, and that their suffering is sometimes equally as intense as the person with the addiction or the mental illness.
Wow. All right. Who's got the next question here? Brian?
We talked a little bit earlier about how you the way you saw it, you only had a couple probably job venues after you finished school. And you ended up in social work. Can you, I know you said that you were attracted to a civil service job, but you can't tell me that's the reason why you stayed for as long as you did. So can you tell us a little bit about what drew you to that field of work, please?
So I think what drew me to it, I think I was honest in my answer. I didn't even think of other things other than basic, you know, things women of that generation did who came from a working class background. But I think once I got my first job at a state hospital, I was appalled. I was effective and was able to move on to really create programs that took people out of state hospitals and helped them live successfully in the community.
Mm-hmm. David.
Yep. Now you've become this expert in mental health. What would you have done differently to help your mum? And do you have any regrets? You know, do you think you could have done better?
I had regrets, but I have to say, as my mom got older and she just died a few months ago, she also got better without treatment, but her life changed. And so I think I was able to help her in her last years in a way I couldn't as a child.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, she was died at 95. She became very fragile in the last few years, lived in assisted living, and I was able to be devoted and help her both financially as well as emotionally.
This, the word devotion, is it's your middle name, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Why? What do I mean by devotion?
Yeah, why? Why is it so? Why is this word devotion so important to you?
I think it's who I am rather than what I do. It's become part of, you know, my nature is to be very passionate and to want to get things done for people who often don't have a voice of their own.
And you think that stems perhaps from some of your perceptions and feelings when you were a little girl with mom suffering in bed with migraines?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What was Dad's role in this whole thing?
So Dad also drank, so we had kind of a double whammy. He worked hard to support the family, but also had his own demons, which, again, I didn't understand as a child, but it certainly also had an impact.
So your nature as a little girl was to try to sort stuff out all the time, huh?
Yes, and mm-hmm. to be anxious that something bad was going to happen.
And maybe your own therapy is giving back to 10 million people as well as your own grandkids.
And to be in control, to be able to build something, to know I'm financially successful and to know that I can solve problems.
But it's not the money. I mean, the safety and the security and the goal for you wasn't the money. It was 10 million people and 5 grandkids.
Yep.
Uh-huh. It's interesting. It wasn't the money, though. It was the people.
I think it's the money as well. I do well, and I think that was important to me, too. Mm-hmm. And so I took risks and took positions to get ahead.
Uh-huh, but you could have stuck with the civil service stuff.
Yes.
Uh-huh, but you didn't.
Right.
But if the money was that important, wouldn't you have stuck with the civil service job?
No, I mean, I think I did for quite some time, but I was able to move into, a leadership role. I was Deputy Commissioner of Mental Health in New York State and then was really recruited for the position I have now, where I've been able to be quite entrepreneurial.
Mm-hmm. Gwen or Zach, what question do you have?
Linda, you talked about at the beginning empowering your employees, and I was just wondering if there was something early in your career or early in your life that really drove that appreciation.
Well, I think, you know, again, I'm very loyal and devoted, and we have a big staff, lots of millennials who need things that are quite different from baby boomers and Gen X. And now it's about giving them opportunities to align their professional goals with the work they're doing. And they are all very passionate about making sure everyone has access to care.
Zach, what are you thinking?
Yeah. You spoke earlier about being brought up in a financially struggling household. How did you translate that mentality from that to being a successful business leader?
I think I certainly wasn't going to grow up in a successfully struggling household any longer. I married someone who is a professional whose family was in business and in the professions, and that was a tremendous and is a tremendous support to me. So I saw what was possible. I had seen what was possible when I went to school with other kinds of people from different backgrounds. And so I always looked forward to doing something that solved problems while at the same time could make a good living.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what's success look like?
I think success looks like at this point in my career, if we can keep healthcare whole for people where it's a right, not a privilege, that would be a tremendous success.
Mm-hmm. What do you do in your spare time?
Think about work.
What do you mean?
It's really who I am, not what I do. So there isn't that much spare time. You know, we're always available. I'll have press calls. You know, we'll have opportunities to put ads in states where senators are wavering.
Do you get paid extra for doing that stuff on the weekends and at nights and early mornings?
No, but I don't think CEOs get paid extra. They get paid well because they do that.
So you do it because it really is who you are.
Yep.
Uh-huh. What's the website address of this organization known as the National Council for Behavioral Health?
TheNationalCouncil.org.
TheNationalCouncil.org. We've been speaking with Linda Rosenberg, CEO of the National Council for Behavioral Health, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. And your name is?
Chris Spilly.
And Chris, what organization are you with?
I am the CEO of CSA Studio.
And what are you guys doing?
We are a branding firm. We create print and digital assets for companies to use to tell their stories.
All right. And what do you enjoy about your job? What do you like about what you do?
I have always been passionate about storytelling. So I enjoy helping organizations of all types, consumer product companies, nonprofits, associations, tell their stories and communicate effectively with audiences who should care about what they do.
So you're going to help them with their website design?
Yes, we do all digital assets. So we do websites, we do electronic newsletters, e-blasts, videos, and also print design
would
as well.
Would you
so
get
brochures.
Involved with designing billboards and stuff like that?
Sure. Anything in the print and digital world.
But you're not doing the media buying piece
we
of it.
We do not do media buying.
And do you do the getting press piece of it all?
We do some PR, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's all sort of part of the same effort. So we do anything you would need in terms of communicating across every communications platform.
Mm-hmm. And do you manage to get and keep clients for the long term?
I'm sorry.
Do you get and keep clients for the long term?
One of the things I'm most proud of is the number of clients who have been with us for decades. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had my own.
Why do they stick around?
Because
for so
I think
long?
We a couple of reasons. I think mm-hmm. we look at organizations holistically, mm-hmm. And so a client might come to us and say, "We need X," and we might take a step back and say, mm-hmm. "You have limited resources."
So you're really getting
point.
To know them, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
What's the website address?
So maybe
address
you should do this now and that
and
later.
And what's the website address of the organization?
It's csastudio.com.
And this has been your business spotlight. Nice, you did that. That was nice. It was tight.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. I'd like to introduce Christine Jung, president of Blue Compass. Christine, what is Blue Compass? What are you guys doing?
Blue Compass is an IT strategy firm.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of IT strategy stuff are you doing, and who are you doing what for?
Well, our flagship program is running hackathons around the country for a federal agency.
That sounds like a pretty innovative idea. How young were you when you began developing better ways to do things? How young were you?
At a very young age, I was always breaking things apart, putting it back together.
Give us an example of how you were taking things apart and putting them back together, 8 to 14.
My dad would order things out of a mail catalog, and I was always the one to put it together.
Your dad would order things out of a catalog, and you were the one to put it together. Why were you doing that?
Because I just wanted to see things come to fruition. So something from nothing, that was the goal.
Oh, I see. And how young were you when you started making money? What kind of stuff were you doing?
Well, I was part of Girl Scouts, went door-to-door, sold Girl Scout cookies, also did a mail catalog thing.
So you were selling Girl Scout cookies. What did you do different than all the other Girl Scouts?
Well, other Girl Scouts, their parents helped them, but I was one of the only ones where the parents didn't help.
All right, so I guess you didn't do too well selling cookies then, right?
No, I actually did pretty well. I was competitive.
Yeah, you told us you were number one. How come you were so, it sounds like you're pretty motivated.
My parents were actually, they helped me in terms of the motivation piece, so they coached me along the way and mentored, but they were hands-off.
Uh-huh, okay, good. Who's got the right question for Christine?
Did you ever worry about not, you break it and then put it together again? Did you ever worry about not being able to put it back together?
No, because the risk of failure, I guess I just wasn't scared of it, and my parents always reassured me that everything would be okay in the end.
And how did that impact your later life, your management style?
I think that there's always a way to accomplish what you need to, and even if you do fail, as long as there's a lesson to learn from it, then that's something you can use going forward.
Gwen?
You talked about being competitive. What do you think drove that competitiveness, and is it in you still today?
It's definitely still in me today. I think the competition came from maybe siblings. My sister was older. She was 9 years older, but I was always kind of competing against her history, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You told us that she was like a third parent to you.
So she knew more than my parents and would be a parenting role in terms of not getting me in trouble and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So what do mom and dad do for a living?
My dad has his own CPA firm, and my mom had a luggage store on K Street and also was a realtor.
Brian?
Well, you indicated earlier that you saw how your parents managed their businesses, and you thought it was a stressful situation, and you never really were driven at that point in life to go into business for yourself. What did you take away from your parents' situations that you use now in managing your own business? Because eventually you did take that route. What skills or lessons perhaps did you use to sort of make adjustments to make it an attractive situation for you?
I think one thing that I learned from my parents is that character is everything. And even if the situation doesn't come out the way that you want it to, what you walk away from it is your character. In the future, that's what you go off of, and you can't walk away from that.
I'm not sure I understand that fully. What are you talking about? I mean, if I do something and I fail at it, I failed at it, right? Wrong?
Yeah. Well, one thing that I've learned from my parents and also from my own experience is even when people don't see in that one lifetime event, if it didn't work out, and you use that experience to help others, and sometimes they learn that if you went about things without integrity, you could have gained what you wanted at the time. But you went with your business in a way that with integrity and character, and so that's how you gain additional.
What other adults influenced you when you were a little girl? Who else influenced you? Was it grandparents, aunts, uncles, neighbors? Who else did something to you?
Other than my parents, definitely church leaders. My family was very active in church, and Sunday school teachers, pastors, so forth.
How'd they influence you?
Just being a positive role model and always helping me outside. Because with your parents, you never know if that's the truth. And so they were always complimenting that.
Well, you wanted perspective. You were looking for your own perspective. It sounds like they gave you other perspective. You felt comfortable going to other adults and talking to them. And they expose you to other perspectives?
And it's not just adults, it's older kids as well. So as a middle schooler looking up to a high schooler, as a 8-year-old looking up to a 12-year-old.
So the way you developed your own opinion was listening to others. You actually encourage others to give you input, and then you would pick and choose what feels right?
Exactly.
Do you do that in business now?
Yes, I do.
Give us an example of that.
I'm always looking for mentors. I look at mentors for either business or work-life balance, so forth. Right now I'm looking for a mentor in social entrepreneurship, so helping understand how to make a business while helping people in social impact.
Mm-hmm. We got a couple of people in this room that I think would take you on. Brian?
When you first started your business, did your parents give you any business advice?
Oh, yeah, they gave me a lot of advice. Because I'm their younger child, they were scared that I didn't know what I was doing. But my father is a CPA. He helped me look at my business model, making sure my overhead, G&A, and all of that was in reason.
Gwen, what else are you picking up? What else are you thinking?
Well, I'm just curious about hacking. Hacking, you have to be a good sleuth. You have to kind of think like the person on the other end. How did you develop that sense?
It's funny because the hackathon program, that was actually something that I helped drive. That opportunity didn't exist from the government. I helped shape that. So what I wanted to do was help the government, bringing new ideas, new people to the table, and while also bringing benefit to the public. So I'm helping NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and they're basically like Google Maps for defense. And so they provide a very good business B2B type of function for a lot of agencies. So we bring a lot of people to hackathons, but the way that we draw people in is through the theme or an educational opportunity. The themes have addressed things like food security. I have one coming up actually here at George Mason about human trafficking and first response.
Well, you're full of ideas. Zach, what's your question?
So hacking and hackathon is pretty creative. Does that creativity resonate when you were a child? Did you play any instruments, and has that impacted your life now?
Yep, I actually played a lot of instruments. I played piano, cello, flute, and also sang.
Do you play any right now, currently?
Yes, piano. We actually just got our first piano. Our
home. Why didn't you play as much as you used to?
Work and life and so forth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any regrets?
Any regrets in life?
Yes.
Actually, I don't. I'm pretty happy, if you can believe that.
Mm-hmm. And why?
I believe that my hope and faith in God is always driving me, and I know that where I am right now is where I'm meant to be, and I obey God with the little that is given to me, and I'm comfortable with knowing that I don't know the whole picture. So With my family, with my work, I'm pretty fulfilled.
What's the website address of this organization? It is Blue Compass?
Yes, it's bluecompass-llc.com.
Let me have that one more time.
bluecompass-llc.com.
We've been speaking with Christine Jung, president of Blue Compass, here on Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Joe and Zach Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Brian Chandler, Pretoria Law, David Farrell, Farrell Advisory, and Gwen Rosner, Flex Professionals. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Sometimes business owners and entrepreneurs don't follow a traditional schedule. Well, that's where BizTV's Biz Club can work for you on your time. For only $5.95 a month, you can have over 200 hours of our fresh, original content on demand, anywhere, anytime. And with our search feature, you can quickly and easily find the topic or show you're looking for in seconds. Sign up today and see what you've been missing. Free for 7 days. Join the Biz Club. It's BizTV. On your time.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
My name is Bobby. I'm a veteran and lost my leg to a roadside bomb. My victory was going from a wheelchair to becoming a weightlifting champion.
I'm Sam. I'm a veteran. My victory was finding a career that I could be proud of.
At DAV, we're on a mission, helping veterans of all generations get the benefits they've earned.
I'm Cece. My victory was finishing my education.
When America's veterans win, we all win. Help us support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hey there. Did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma?
It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park, or the beach, or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop, for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right. Get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
888-904-1986. 888-904-1986. That's 888-904-1986.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Maral Nakashian, who's president and co-founder of an organization known as M.N. Blum. What is M.N. Blum? What are you guys doing?
M.N. Blum is a CPA firm located in Rockville, Maryland.
And how large or how small is this firm?
The firm is 25 employees, and it's 4 years old.
Wow. You guys are growing quickly. Where are you from originally?
I was born and raised in Beirut, Lebanon.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
We are five altogether, and I am the middle one.
You were the middle one. What was the effect of your growing up at that time being the middle child?
Probably I'm one of the children that would say that although I was the middle one, for 9 years, by default, I became the older one.
How's that? What do you mean?
It was during wartime in Lebanon, and my older two siblings have left the country with my father, so I became the oldest child of three remaining in Lebanon.
So what did that do to you? What kind of special responsibilities did you take on?
Well, by default, I didn't have a choice but to, being the oldest now, make sure that my siblings were provided with any means possible to survive the war and make sure we have food to eat.
So that food thing was a pretty big, pretty important. So what did you do to get food?
Well, what everybody else did is you wake up early in the morning before the sunrise and you start walking around to see what bakeries open and if there's electricity and be able to buy a loaf of bread and bring it home to your sisters and brother.
Mm-hmm. What effect did that have on you? What effect did that experience have on you today?
It made me the survivor I am right now. I knew that I had to survive during the bombing and make it home safe so my sister and brother have bread to eat.
But as opposed to getting angry and vengeful, it sounds to me like through the course of the conversation earlier, that's not who you are. How young were you when you came to the United States?
I was 22 years old.
Uh-huh. You came here alone or with family?
I came by myself.
Uh-huh. And where'd you stay?
I stayed with my aunt's house for 6 months.
You stayed at your aunt's house. What'd you do to make money?
Well, the next day I woke up, I just went and talked to the neighbors who had a business, and I said, can I work there so I can make money because
so
I didn't come with
money. What kind of job did you get?
It was a supply store and grocery store that I was a cashier
you
selling.
You were the cashier. So you're 22. You came to the United States, and you got a job as a cashier. And tell us a little bit about mom and dad. Did they eventually get here?
Yes. They were here 6 months after I came.
Mm-hmm. David?
So you're in Lebanon with all the war. What's taught you? What's the most important thing in your life that war experience has impacted you on?
No matter what life throws at you, you have to survive first. And if you survive, then you can do anything else in this life.
Gwen?
Where did you get your accounting training?
In here in the United States, because when I came here and I worked as a cashier, I knew, and I said, wow, this is one country you can actually do anything else you want.
And how long did it take you?
It took me about 14 years of night school to get my degree.
Wait. It took you 14 years to get your degree?
That is correct.
Why did it take 14 years?
Because I was married at age 24, and we had no money, but I wanted to get my degree in this country, so I went one class at a time so I can afford it and raise family at the same time and work.
Interesting. So you got your degree, you finally got your degree, and you're running an accounting firm now, which is 25 people. Uh-huh. And what's special about this accounting firm? Because I'm sure there's something special going on here, considering who you are and you're running it.
It is my baby. I am creating something from scratch, and I am someone who came from a country with nothing and in a country that said, the world is yours. Show us what you can do.
So how does that affect your treating your clients?
I love my clients, and I appreciate every single one of them because I appreciate the country that gave me the opportunity. Without them, I will not be here.
So as opposed to just going for more, it sounds to me like you don't lose relationships. Your nature is the bond relationships because that's what you learned back in Lebanon. Isn't that true?
That's all I've done all my life. Why would it be different now?
What do you mean that's all you've done your whole life? What are you talking about?
I kept my siblings together. All my friends in Lebanon looked up to me because I was the strongest one. And I've always helped everyone else without needing anything back because I always felt like I can do this. There's more to life that I can do than just accept the mere fact that I'm a woman born in a foreign country and I should just get old, get married, and move on.
So so I'm sure this affects your staffing. You tend to have pretty low turnover, don't you, both in terms of staff as well as clients, don't you?
Yeah, they don't leave me. They somehow love me. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's because you keep on giving. Who gives to you?
Well, I have a great partner because I couldn't have done this without my partner, M.N. Blum. We started the company together.
Why would you have a partner? Why don't you keep all the money yourself?
Greed is not a good thing. This is not about money.
Wait a minute. You grew up in a war-torn country where you didn't have enough to eat. What are you talking about? Greed is not a good thing.
I didn't have enough to eat. I had enough money and food. It's okay, you know. We make the money. The money doesn't make us. Mm-hmm. So as long as you got a team and a partner and you're happy, the money comes.
Brian?
Well, obviously, you learn survival growing up in a civil war. And also, I think you told us earlier that you were a member of a minority group, Armenians, in Lebanon. Did that have any impression or does that give you some other additional insight into, you know, moving forward, coming to a diverse country like the United States?
All I wanted to do, being a girl, Armenian, in the Middle East, looking around and seeing your siblings and everybody else get married, I wanted more. And America is the country that said, you want more? Here it is. Don't use the country or your background as an excuse or your gender. Go get it. It's for you to take if you want it.
Your partner, Abba, is here. Abba, how long have you guys been partners?
We started the firm 4 years ago. Previous to that, we worked about 12 years together.
Uh-huh. What's it like working with her?
Every day is a new day.
What do you mean?
You just can't plan on your calendar being what is going to happen during that day. Uh-huh. As Morales indicated, we work really closely with clients. And so when a client calls, Morales is the first one to deal with the issue. And then the whole firm jumps in and deals with it.
What do you guys do different from each other?
Morale really runs the company, and she's the true leader of the company that everyone looks to. And my role is more on the transaction side and working with the events that are happening with our clients.
Mm-hmm. Do you trust her?
With my life.
No, wait a minute. You guys married?
No, we're not.
I thought business was blood and guts and shareholder agreements and litigation. What do you mean you trust her with your life? Did you mean to say that?
Absolutely meant to say it. Our firm was founded on the idea that it's not blood and guts, and it's not business, and it's not dog eat dog. Everything we do is equal. Every client we work on together, and every opportunity we share, and we pass that down to our staff as well. And I think our clients see that.
Do your clients see that, and does your staff see that? And give us some evidence of that.
It's a very common event from round IV in front of a client and be asked a particular question, maybe about taxes, and we would take the exact opposite position and debate it in front of the client. And that would give the client the opportunity to see the range of opportunities out there. And we're very comfortable showing the clients both sides of every question.
Doesn't that make the other one look bad? Isn't that political suicide?
If we're in a place that was about politics and about suicide, yes. But we're in a business where we work together, and our focus is more business. It's about the relationships and sharing our knowledge with our clients.
Huh. How's that filtered out into the clients and into the staff? Excuse me.
We try to emphasize this every day. Staff are always saying, "Hey, how am I doing compared to my peer?" And we say, "How are you doing with your peer?" And we emanate that throughout the whole firm.
Mm-hmm. Could you see running the business without the morale?
There is no business without morale.
So you guys, you're really committed to morale and the business and the staff.
As she is to us and as we are to our clients.
Huh. That's fascinating to me. Who's got the next question here? Because there's some other good questions floating around. Yes.
I have one for morale. It sounds like you're very grateful for America and the opportunity that you've had here. Has there been any difficulty adjusting to our culture?
if I have to compare that on the business side, I have nothing to compare to because I was a kid and I didn't know any business when I came. But if I have to compare that to the culture side, well, there's a huge difference between the culture of where I come from and the culture in the country. And for someone like me who has two kids, they were born in America, the most difficult part is not running a company. It is making sure your children are raised in this country, adapting to what the country offers, but saving the integrity of what you believe in.
I think what I heard also is greed. You are not greedy. And this is, you know, a very competitive kind of culture. Has that been an issue at all?
You know, I don't know. If you ask me to define definition of greed, I'm going to say I don't want to define it because I don't even think about it or never thought of it. I see it, I hear about it, but I wouldn't know what it is or where to start feeling that way.
What did your very close family, what's the difference in sort of what's right and wrong? What's the difference that your mum talked and what you tell your kids? What's the difference?
Well, my mom said when you're 16, 17, you get married and I tell you who it is and you're done. I say to my children, we are in this country. You will not get married until you get your degrees and you're self-sufficient, then you can get married. That's a huge difference for how I was raised and how this country taught me what it should be the right way.
Morrell, what's the website address for this organization known as MN Blum?
It is mnblum.com.
We've been speaking with Morrell Nakashian, president and co-founder, and Abba Blum, vice president of MN Blum, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, we'll be back in a moment right after this break. And your name is?
Mike Cromwell.
And what organization are you with?
Outcome Capital.
Now, what does Outcome Capital do?
We're an investment bank.
And what's an investment bank do for its clients, and who are your clients?
Our clients are generally privately held companies, and we help them either sell their business or raise private capital.
You help them. So what do you bring to the party? What do you have to know special when you're dealing with your clients?
Well, we're a unique group in that we have a lot of people with hands-on operating experience, and so we know what our clients' strategic options are, and we have current real-time information about who the capital providers are and who the buyers are and how the deals are structured.
It sounds to me like this business is really like a chess game of putting different pieces together. How young were you when you were playing chess, even though it may not have been the game of chess?
Well, I did not play the game of chess, but I learned a lot growing up from my dad about the growth stock investing business. He worked for Mr. T. Rowe Price, who founded that industry.
Yeah, and you mentioned that when you were 16 or 17 or 18, you would get all this mail. What kind of mail, and what were you doing with the mail?
We got pounds and pounds of mail every day on all the growth stocks that were out there. I remember most vividly McDonald's when it was a little tiny.
And what
company.
Were you doing? You were looking at the stuff or throwing it in the fireplace?
No, I would try to read it and understand what was going on.
You were what? You were 16 years old. You were trying to read all this stuff and understand what was going on?
Well, I knew every once in a while Mr. Price was going to show up to our house for dinner, so I needed to be able to have something to talk to him about.
So you really derived a lot of satisfaction, let alone recognition, really knowing about all this corporate stuff. What's the website address of your organization?
OutcomeCapital.com.
Let me have that one more time.
OutcomeCapital.com.
And why is it called Outcome Capital?
Because we try to create the best outcomes possible
I
for
got
our
it.
Clients.
We've been speaking with Mike Cromwell, Outcome Capital, here on Executive Leaders Radio.
Nice. You did that. Yeah.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call
the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Chris Coleman, CEO of Looking Glass. Chris, what is Looking Glass? What are you guys doing?
Yeah, Looking Glass is a cybersecurity company focused on operationalizing cyber threat intelligence for our customers.
How large or how small is this organization?
We are a 307-person organization with offices across the U.S. and international as well.
Uh-huh. When was it founded? What year was that?
The company was founded in 2009.
And when did you join the organization?
I came into the organization 2013, from some of the early round investors brought me in.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you grew up in a bunch of different places. You went to 5 or 10 different schools before you graduated high school. And why was that? Why'd you move around so much?
So my dad was in the aluminum business, and that business just took us to a lot of different places and gave me the opportunity to live in a lot of different states. And mm-hmm. along with that comes a lot of adapting and
So what'd you learn moving all those times that you use in business nowadays that helped you succeed in business?
I think that when you move to a new location, it's really important to sit back and observe before you take action. Otherwise, action taken hastily could result in, when you're a kid, it could result in punches, kicks, or other things. But that same type of observance and requirement to take things in before making decisions and calling out your social structures and things of that nature are important.
Well, what's that have to do? When you took over, as it says here, you're the CEO of Looking Glass. When you took over the organization, how did your experience as a kid moving help prepare you for being the CEO of Looking Glass?
Well, so I was a new kid on the block, right? The only difference is I was in charge, so I had to assess the company and the state that it was in. The talent that we had, and come up with a plan that was going to allow us to be successful moving forward.
Mm-hmm. We asked you a little bit in the green room about what you liked to do as a kid, and mm-hmm. do you remember what you told us?
Yeah, I said I daydreamed a lot as a kid. Yeah,
and you also played a particular type of game.
A lot of strategy games. Yeah.
And as I'm listening to you now and I think about the name of your company, Looking Glass, and I think about daydreaming and strategy games, how is that all playing together?
So we're in the cyber field, and it's a technology field, and it's an extremely dynamic, ever-changing field. So I think that with all business strategy is critical, but especially in a business that changes on a daily basis. So I think that having a well-thought-out strategy that the company understands and that the company's behind is critical for us to be able to execute properly on our business plan.
But also flexible enough from a daydreaming perspective?
Flexibility is key when things change on a daily basis, as they do in our industry. So
yeah, you put your finger on him because he went like this and gulped when you first asked the question. William, what question do you got?
Yeah, Chris, I'm interested. You're in the cyber field. You're protecting companies and, frankly, our country. You'd mentioned in the green room that right out of high school, you went into the Army. What was behind that?
I just wanted to serve. I have a deep appreciation for the country and serving, and I think it's an important thing for us to do. And
you actually mentioned nothing's better than what? What were you talking about?
I was talking about having a mission. I was talking about having a mission and a purpose, right? And there's I personally believe that our military serves a very high purpose in the country, and I believe that all of our businesses serve a purpose. I like to think that the work that we're doing, not just for the companies that we're protecting, but also the governments and global aspects of what we're protecting, has a deep purpose.
What kind of sports did you play as a kid?
I played a lot of sports, but predominantly I was a hockey player growing up.
What was your role on the team?
I was a center, and I enjoyed that position. If you're familiar with hockey, center is one of the positions that has a defensive and offensive responsibility, and everybody likes to score goals, but sometimes you have to be responsible in your own zone, and I always enjoyed that responsibility of that position.
What's that have to do with your building this organization called Looking Glass, being the center of that team?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's the responsibility of leadership, and I'm a big fan of what, we've talked a lot about different leadership strategies throughout the show, and I'm a big fan of what my servant leadership, right? So as a leader in my company, I have to serve not just my board and my investors, but most importantly, I have to serve my customers and my people.
Gotcha. Eamon, you have a question there?
You were talking about your father's blue-collar job his whole life. What do you relate to more, to your father, how, and our mom?
Yeah, so my dad was definitely in management, but we grew up in a mills or a blue-collar unionized element, and I think that my dad taught me what it was like to work on a mill, right? I learned to burn, I learned to weld. I think we poured 56 trucks of concrete in one day, right? And the value of that work and respecting the people that do it, but also pauses you to think what else you want to do. And I think that having the balance of understanding what it takes to build something from the very rudimentary levels of concrete, steel, and sweat to what we do in the technology industry is simply just an innovation of where we are as a country.
Chelsea, what do you got?
Country.
You mentioned earlier you are the youngest of five, and your next sibling is 11 years older than you. Can you tell us a little bit about how the family dynamic growing up affected you and how you lead people and how you interact with other people today?
So 11 years separated me from my next sibling. I was the flu, and as my mother said, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like being the benefits of being the only child, but having the benefits of a whole four older siblings that would come in and out at different times of life, whether it be finishing high school or coming back from college breaks, or and looking at what they were doing as an adult, or as when I was a child, looking forward to what they were doing in their adulthood lives, was always kind of put me on a path of immediately thinking about what I was going to be doing at a young age, and it's something that I think shaped how I view things. I'm very forward thinking, and I'm always trying to anticipate what I'm going to be doing, but also from a business perspective, what we're going to be doing from a business.
So you talked about the venture capitalist putting you in as CEO in 2013. Do they speak about how observant you are, how intuitive you are, and how important is that in what you do on a day-to-day basis?
The beauty is, you cannot replace intuition if you're good at it in your field. Right? Mm-hmm. So intuition is a almost irreplaceable business trait. Mm-hmm. So whether my my board and my venture capitalists appreciate that or not. I like to think venture capital.
They can listen to this.
What's the website address of the organization?
A website address is lookingglasscyber.com.
We've been speaking with Chris Coleman, CEO of Looking Glass, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We've had the opportunity to speak with Ron Rubin, CEO and Managing Partner of Bridgewater Wealth and Financial Management, Dr. Robert Hahn, President, Government Solutions, Retech, Brett Rugo, President of Rugo Stone, and most recently, Chris Coleman, CEO of Looking Glass. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, including Chelsea Schott and William Tidwell Cressa, Colleen Gillis Cooley, and Iman Bassam, ESB Advertising, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing a listening audience an educational and entertaining show. Thank you for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.